Well, we're in chapters 10, 11, and 12 again this week. Isn't this fun, doing the same chapters every week? Yeah. Last night I told the ladies, I'm not sure exactly what we're supposed to cover new this week, so we'll just go. And we had a really good time with it, so I'm sure we will today, too. So let's look at a little bit of review. First of all, what would you say the main theme of the book of Daniel is? You should know it by now. Yes! Good, Kathy. Okay, Fruity. Okay, Most High God rules over the realm of mankind. Mankind, and what else?
He bestows it on whomever he wishes.
Okay. He bestows it on whomever he wishes. Whoever he wishes. Of course, we are studying that part of the book where that came through. When the elections were, we're in the election cycle, and it was really comforting to know that really is the Lord who is ruling over the affairs of mankind, that he gives the leadership to whomever he wishes, and he raises up and he takes down, doesn't he? Now, if we think about the first six chapters of Daniel, they have a little book chart, and they have segment divisions and all that, and you can think of different ways to divide the book. So if you're thinking about the first six chapters, what's distinct about the first six chapters? What's that?
History.
Okay, it's historical. It's chronological. It's chronological history. Look at that. Begins with what time in history? What's that? Okay, it's the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, right? So it starts at the beginning of the captivity. It's the Babylonian captivity, and it goes all the way through... what? The first six chapters. Where does it end?
Darius.
Okay, with Darius. So he goes all the way through, so we know it's about 70 years' time. And so then chapters 7 through 12, how do they fit in with that? Okay, they're prophecy, and they kind of fit... kind of like fingers, don't they? They fit in between the different chapters of different events of chapters 1 through 6. So they, it's prophetic and it fits inside that framework. Okay, fits into the events of 1 through 6. And then in chapters 1 through 6, Daniel is doing what?
He's interpreting other people's visions.
Okay. He interprets other people's visions. Visions of his own, doesn't he? Yeah, he gets a little help interpreting those, doesn't he? All right, so that's some different ways you can break the book up, make it a little bit, you know, more easy to remember what it's about. All right, so the message then of Daniel 10 through 12 was given when? Okay, it was in the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia. So we know we've gone all the way through the Babylonian captivity, and now we're into the Medes and the Persians, and Daniel has a dream. Now, what kind of a man was Daniel? Because I think as we think about, as I've been painting the last few days, I've been listening to Daniel over and over again, and I've been thinking about the character of Daniel, because just like the messenger in chapter 10 kind of lays the framework for 11 and 12 as well, we get a good foundation about who Daniel is in the first chapter of Daniel, and then kind of throughout the first six chapters, and what kind of a man was he? Yeah, we see that in chapter 10, don't we? After all that we see about Daniel, and what kind of things do we see about Daniel that brings that angel to say that you are highly esteemed? What kind of a life did he live? Okay, he's humble. Okay, he's dedicated to doing God's will. We know that in the very first chapter, because what does it say? He set his mind not to defile himself, and that really characterizes him from chapter 1 all the way through the book, doesn't he? That he was a man who was not going to defile himself with anything, not with idol worship, not with, of course, the food was the first thing. Okay, so he was a humble, humble person. What else do we see about him?
It seems to me he was very disciplined. You know, he did everything he was supposed to do no matter what was going on around him. Just a very disciplined person.
Yeah, we saw that when he prayed, didn't he? That it was his custom to pray when? Three times a day. So you imagine that no matter what he was doing, he would stop and he would pray three times a day. I mean, to have that kind of discipline in our life is really, that's admirable. We really think about it, think about our own lives, isn't it? That he was that disciplined. And so by the time you get to chapter 10, we know that the Lord is looking at his life and saying, you are someone I highly value. And it's because of all of this. And God entrusted his words to Daniel because he was that kind of a man. He allowed him to speak forth his word and to give the message that God had for the people. And so that was really kind of neat. Okay. So as we look then at this lesson this week, we were supposed to go back and they gave you a bunch of different verses to look in Daniel that talk about the end times and what kind of things that are characteristic of that. I think that was what those verses were. And then we looked at chapters 11, or Matthew 23 and Mark 13, and we're going to go through those a little bit. So if you think about those verses that you looked at in Daniel, what do we know about the end times, the appointed times, the time yet to come? It's not here yet. All right. And that's important, you know, that sounds silly, but that's really important for us to know, isn't it? Because there are some who believe that it has already come and that we are living in the millennium. So there are people that do believe that. So how do we know it hasn't come yet? What do we base our belief that it has not come yet on?
Because Rome is not in power.
What's that?
Rome is not in power.
Okay, it's on the scripture, isn't it? Okay, we can look and we can see that God's word says a certain thing and we can base our convictions on that. So what does it say in Daniel about what the end times are going to be in all those verses you looked up in the book of Daniel that we've already studied, of course, but what do we see? Okay, so we have that to look forward to, right? Okay. It hasn't happened yet. Okay, so we had two different men talked about in this book, didn't we? Who was the first one, the first kind of landmark guy who was going to come on the scene? Okay, Antiochus Epiphanes, right? Now, he came out of what kingdom? Okay, so we had the Greek kingdom under who? Okay, Alexander. And when he died, it divided up into how many? Okay, four different kingdoms. They weren't as strong as the first one, but they had four kingdoms. And we had the north, which was what?
Syria.
And the south was?
Egypt.
Okay, Egypt. And we knew, I think, from chapter 8 that out of the northern kingdom, there's going to be another little horn coming up, right? man, what was he going to be like? Bad. He was, what kind of
despicable.
Despicable. I love that word. He was despicable. And what did he do? What made him so despicable?
He said of the abomination.
Okay, the abomination of desolation. What was his demeanor like?
Proud and sneaky.
Okay, proud and sneaky. Remember he named himself Antiochus Theos Epiphanes, which meant he was a manifestation of God himself. So how did he view himself? Yeah, he viewed himself as God, and you know his friends nicknamed him. What was it? The madman. Yeah, they kind of took a little turn, Epimenes, and took a turn on that name. So he was viewed as a madman, but he thought he was God himself, and so he operated on that view of himself. He was arrogant, and how did he treat the people of Israel? What's that? Okay, he persecuted them, didn't he? And we know we saw last week how every time he'd fight a battle, they'd go through the land, go back and forth, and he'd be mad or whatever. He'd take it out on them. In the end, then he, because there were some that sided with him, weren't they? Which ones were those in Israel that sided with him?
The Hellenized Jews.
Okay, the Hellenized Jews, the ones that really were in agreement that the world should become Greek. They, you know, went along with that. And so there were some that he didn't mind, but then the rest of them he persecuted. We know he tried to wipe out Judaism because Judaism did not conform to the Hellenized view of the world, did it? They didn't want them to keep their own gods and their own worship and their own laws. They want them to conform. And so he did terrible things to the babies that were circumcised and to the people that kept the law. And there were many, many that lost their lives during his time. Of course, he did come to an end. How did he come to an end? Did somebody kill him? No, he died. The Lord took him. He died. He did not get killed. He died. So it came to an end, not with the help of humans, but he decided on his own. So he is gone. So we know that he is a man that lived in a certain time, and that was came out of this kingdom. But then there's another one to come. And where does the other one come from? Which kingdom?
Rome.
Okay, we had the feet. We had the 10 toes. The 10 little toes here, and out of those 10 toes, who's going to arise? Okay, the little horn, and this comes out of the Roman Empire. And we know this is yet to come. Now, what's his character like? Even more despicable, yeah. So we see that we have this Antiochus Epiphanes was a foreshadowing, wasn't he? And it makes it easy to confuse what the events are because he is one that came on the scene back then, but his character is so much like, and his actions are so much like the one who is to come, that sometimes it makes it hard to kind of untangle who's who, doesn't it? And so we know that there is a time of indignation that Israel is in right now, that God is indignant with them. And why is God indignant with them? Okay, because of their, you know, everything that we saw in Jeremiah and everything that we saw in Isaiah, they have turned their back on God and they put him behind them instead of looking at his, turning their face to him, they gave him the back and they are now under a time of indignation. And so this guy over here was kind of part of the first part of the indignation. Then we have some that's still to come. And we know that the little horn will be in that final period of indignation. And what is he going to do? Okay, he also is going to desecrate the temple. We didn't really talk about it, I don't think, but Antiochus Epiphanes did that as well, didn't he? He set up worship to Zeus and offered the pigs on the altar and desecrated the temple so that when the Maccabees actually did rebel and get the temple back, they had to rebuild the altar. They totally destroyed it because it had been so desecrated, they had to just make a whole new one. And so we have the little horn, the Antichrist, then when he comes into power, he's going to, of course, make that covenant with the people for how long? Okay, he's going to make the covenant. I'm sure he isn't thinking any particular, but we know it's only going to be for how long? 3.5 years, because in the middle of that 7-year period, he is going to break his covenant with them. And at that point, he's going to set himself up and display himself to be God, isn't he?
Diana, do you think, I thought about this a lot, thinking of the statue in Babylon, the Medes and Persian, Greece, pretty broad, and then we have Rome. Are we saying Rome, like the region, the city? I mean, to me, it's all of a sudden it's come down. Rome is, seems like a smaller, denser area than these other Greek places.
The Roman Empire?
Portugal all the way over to...
The Roman Empire?
Yeah,
I think it was pretty big, but they were strong.
I'm talking about the end.
Oh, the end.
Yes, so I'm thinking God has been gracious to tell us Rome. And to me, it was like, wow, these all seem much broader, and all of a sudden, unless something changes...
Well, we know there's going to be the 10 kingdoms that come at the end that are going to be part of the revived Roman Empire. But the Roman Empire was really big, and so it could go even, I think the Middle East is included in all that. So the kings that come out of there could be over a big period of a big area.
Think of Rome as,
just the city of Rome,
city.
Yeah. Well, I think Rome is kind of like the headquarters, but I think it's broader than all that. I think, yeah. Okay, so we have this one who's going to be another one like the first one, right? Except he's going to be, whereas Antiochus Epiphanes had kind of a localized governance, what about the Antichrist at the end?
Worldwide.
Yeah, he's going to be a worldwide ruler. He's going to have a worldwide dominance and influence. Okay. But what do we know is going to happen at the end to that one? Okay. He is going to be destroyed, isn't he? We know that he's going to be destroyed. Remember back to the statue and the stone that comes out. What does the stone do? Okay, it crushes everything. And then we saw that little vision of the throne room and the Holy of Holies on the throne, and we saw Daniel's watching and he's listening over here and he can hear the boastful talk of the Antichrist. And what happens to him? He's boasting and talking and carrying on until what happens? He is destroyed. And we know that when he's destroyed, the one like the Son of Man is going to come and he is going to receive the kingdom. And his kingdom is going to last for how long?
Forever.
Isn't that encouraging to hear that? You know, from that point on, it will never, ever, ever go back. It will never be taken. All the other ones are going to be destroyed, but his kingdom will last forever. And what do we know about the kingdom of God? What kind of a characteristic is it going to have? Peace. It's going to be peace. Yeah, when there's a righteous ruler on the throne, it will be peace. You know, there won't be any of this carrying on that we have going on today. It's going to be just something like we've never seen before, which is really exciting to think about. I like to just think about it. Sometimes I think we think it's like a storybook and it's just something, this is a fairy tale. We don't really think about the fact that it's real. Okay, well, let's look at Mark and at Matthew. Now, of course, we've studied Matthew. It wasn't that long ago, but I guess it was a couple years ago. We decided last night. Seems like it was just yesterday. But it really wasn't. Now, Mark and Matthew are pretty much the same speech that Jesus gave, or talk that he gave, and they cover the same events, but from a little bit different perspective. So let's look at them both. Let's look at Mark first. Now, these concern what? What is the topic of conversation in Matthew 23 and Mark 13? What's that? Okay, what kind of events are they wondering about? Okay, the end times. So it's about the end times and the times that are going to lead to the Messiah's return. So in Mark chapter 13, he says, as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew were questioning him privately. Now, these were kind of the inner circle guys, right? So they camp and they're going to, we don't have the picture of the context of this. But we're going to see it in Matthew. So they're going to come and ask him some questions. So they say to him, tell us, when will these things be? So the first question is what?
When?
when is, you've said some things here, and he did, we'll see it in Matthew, when are these things going to happen? And what's the next question? What will be the what? Okay, they assume there's going to be a sign. There's going to be some way they're going to know that all these things are going to be fulfilled. So Jesus tells them, and he says over and over again, what? What's the warning he gives them? Okay, don't be misled. Be on your guard. Don't be deceived. So what does that tell us about the character of the age that we live in today? Yeah, that we have to be on our guard, don't we? Because we live in this time period between the cross and when all these things happen, and it must be easy to be deceived. And I think about precept, and that's why I love precept, is that you learn the Word of God, we learn it ourselves, because when we think about deception in the church, we're not really thinking about the guys that we can look at and go, oh man, you know, it's so easy to see, they are so far off. They are just, it's so blatant. What are we worried about? Yeah, the wolves in sheep's clothing. It says in it's either Peter or Timothy that he's going to, I think it's First Peter, that they're going to bring in heresy right alongside the truth, and you won't, it'd be hard to tell the difference. They look almost the same. And you have to know the word to be able to discern where it's off. It's not easy to find. And so he's telling them, be careful. See to it no one misleads you. Don't be deceived. And I think that's just a good word for us as well. Now, who is he talking to here, first of all? Okay, it's his disciples, and they are Jews, aren't they? He's really talking to the Jews here, because has a church been born at this point? No, there is no church yet. And so he says, many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and will mislead many. Now, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be frightened. Those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For a nation will rise up against nation and kingdoms against kingdoms. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. These things are merely the beginning of the birth pangs. So what is he describing to them that is characteristic of the times before he comes back? Okay, there's all kinds of natural disaster things that will happen. There's war or earthquakes and famines and that kind of thing. But then there's also what? Wars, right? There's a lot of wars, and do we see that today? Yes. I think that the really significant description he gives is it's like birth pangs. And we had last night our girl in our class who's going to deliver like in a week, so she was the perfect example of what the birth process is. But we all know if you had a baby, you know that you go along, and then you know one day you think, oh, well, maybe that was a birth labor pain, and then they kind of come, and they're farther apart, and then they start to get what? Closer and more intense as they go, right? So you start off kind of mild and far apart. And that's how these things are, the earthquakes and the famines and the wars and the nations rising up against nations, etc. They're in this time that we live in, they're periodic, but they subside and nothing has really happened yet. But they are going to get closer, right? Just like labor pains, they will get closer and more intense as time goes on. All right, let me see, where am I? Okay, then he says, well, those things are going to happen, but then what else is going to be characteristic of the time? In verses 9 and 10 and 11. Okay, well, it's persecution, right? Yeah, there's going to be persecution that they're going to suffer for whose sake? Okay, for his sake, right? So be on your guard. And he says that when you stand before the kings and the governors to give their testimonies, are they supposed to worry about that? No. How are they to view those times? What are they to know? All right, that the Lord is the one who's going to give them the words to speak, isn't he? And we can have that confidence too, that if we are ever put on the spot, that who is going to give us the words to speak? Yeah, it's the Holy Spirit. The Lord himself will give us the words we need to speak. Okay, so he's talking about a time when it's going to be more and more persecution. There's more and more unrest. There's more and more natural things, disasters happening. And he says, brother will betray brother to death. A father, his child, children will rise up against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all because of my name. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. So if he's talking about the tribulation period, what is he saying here? If they endure to the end, what are they going to see? They're going to be saved physically and enter the kingdom, aren't they? But, now this is where the thing changes here. When you see what? Okay, when you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be, and then both of the chapters have this little parenthesis to the reader, let the reader understand. Now, why do you think he says that? Because it's kind of an interesting little side note. Why is he saying that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, if he says it when you see the abomination of desolation, who is he speaking to exactly? The people at that time. It's at that time because he knew they wouldn't. The 12 disciples are the ones he was speaking to. They weren't going to see the abomination of desolation. But he says, when you see, let the reader understand. If you're alive and you see the abomination of desolation, understand what is happening. You be the one that has understanding. What does it say about those that have understanding in the end times? I saw it in chapter 12. And yeah, they're going to give insight to others, aren't they? So he says, if you understand these things, they should do what then? If they see that abomination of desolation, what are they supposed to do? Yeah, get out of town, right? Leave, flee. Because what is coming to the people that live in the land at that time? Okay, there's going to be tribulation. It says, if you see it, you flee to the mountains. The one on the housetop must not go down or go to get anything out of his house. The one who's in the field must not turn back to get his coat. Woe to those who are pregnant, to those who are nursing babies in those days. Pray it may not happen in the winter time, for those days will be what? Okay, now where do we see that in Daniel? Chapter 12 says the exact same thing, doesn't it? It says it's going to be a time of tribulation like no one has ever seen since the nation began until the end. It says here it has not occurred since the creation, the beginning of the creation, which God created until now and never will again. Unless the Lord had shortened those days, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect whom he chose, he shortened the days. So we know that that's going to be a horrible time, and they are to flee. Now remember we studied a little bit of Revelation at the beginning of this section, I think, and we saw that the woman did what? When the tribulation, when the wrath of when Satan was thrown down and his wrath, okay, she fled. And I wonder if this is what it's talking about, that there's that time when they are going to flee and hide. That remnant is going to be taken and hidden away in that safe place during the tribulation time, away from the wrath of the beast. And so because they're supposed to flee to the mountains and to go. And so we know that they are saved safely for what? Go ahead. Well, they do have the New Testament. I mean, they can have it. I mean, it's there. They can, yeah. Yeah, this is true. Mm-hmm. But where do you also see it, though? It's also in Daniel. They have that too. So I don't know. I never thought of that. But is a good. That's a good observation. I don't believe they are saved. I believe they are not saved, and they're to flee because I don't believe that the Jews that flee to the wilderness are those that are saved during the tribulation. So that is a good point. Part of the elect is a church, but what is the other part? What is the other? He referred in the Old Testament. It's the Jews. Yeah.
So can you say he's just speaking to the Jews here then?
I think so. I think this is speaking to the Jews. I do. And then he goes on to tell how he's going to come back. He says, if anyone says to you, "Behold, here's the Christ, here's the Messiah," or "Behold, he's there," they're not supposed to believe him, right? For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show signs and wonders in order to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. But take heed, behold, I have told you everything in advance. He's not going to sneak in. It's not going to be that one day he kind of sneaks into a room over here and they have to say, oh, hey, look, he's over there. It's not going to be like that. He's going to tell them how it is going to come. He says, but in those days, after the tribulation, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light and the stars will be falling from heaven and the powers that are in the heavens will be shaken. So what kind of a time are we looking for when he's going to come back? It's going to be cataclysmic, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be something that's going to grab your attention. He's not going to just sneak in a back door. It's going to be a big deal. When those things happen, then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. So that is when he's going to come back. That is how he's going to come. It's not going to be, you don't have to worry that if someone says he snuck in over here, over there, it's not going to be him. He's a false Christ. He's not the real one. Yeah.
So where are the Gentile believers? If you're talking about, if the elect in this passage are the Jews, and then we get into the tribulation, where do we fall into this?
I believe the church will be raptured before the tribulation. But there will be many that will be saved during that time, and many that will be martyred during that time as well. There's going to be many, many, many martyrs. And we know there will be the 144,000 Jews going to be evangelizing, and I believe there's going to be many, you know, hearing people talk about that time, that's going to be a revival or a huge, 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 huge amount of people being saved. But many will be killed. Many will be killed.
People that know the gospel but weren't saved. They'll know the Bible, they went to church, they've heard everything, but now they really believe it during that time since they didn't make it, so then
I don't know. I'm not sure if they'll be the ones that will be saved or not. I don't know. Some people say no, that if you've had the chance to hear now, that there's not going to be.
I'm saying that they'll be the ones that will be left for the tribulation.
Whether they'll be saved or not. It'll be an interesting thing. But, yeah, I think this is talking predominantly to the Jewish nation, because as we've seen, that the tribulation is for who? Predominantly, it's a time of whose trouble? It's time of Jacob's trouble to bring them to the place of what? Of repentance as a nation, right? Now, there's Jews that are saved today. The salvation is for everyone today, isn't it? Yes. Okay. Okay, so he's going to come. When he comes back, the point is he's going to come back. You're going to see him. You're going to know it's him. He's not going to sneak in a back room somewhere, it says. But he's going to come in the clouds with power and great glory. And then he's going to send forth the angels and gather his elect from the four winds from the farthest ends of the earth to the farthest end of heaven. So he's going to come and he's going to gather them together. He's going to put his feet down right where? On the Mount of Olives, and we saw that in Zechariah. It talks about him coming back when they're at a time when they're going to be destroyed. Their enemies are gathered on every side of them, and they're going to see him, and they're going to understand who he is, and he's going to fight on their behalf and save them. Now, this is learn the parable from the fig tree. This is a passage that's been talked about forever, and it's kind of taken out of context all the time. When its branches has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, recognize he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. So what generation is he speaking of? And we can answer this with definite confidence.
The generation that sees the sign.
Right. When they see the abomination of desolation, when they see that sign, and all these things happen, that generation that sees that will not pass away until all the rest of the things happen. And this has been talked about. When I first became a Christian, it was when the nation of Israel has become a nation. That's when the fig tree budded. And so now it's that generation that won't die until they've seen all these things. Well, that's been a long time now. But it's talking about the generation that's alive, that sees the sign of the abomination of desolation. That will be the generation that does not pass until the things have taken place. It says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Remember when the angel was telling Daniel, he's going to tell him all the things that were written in that book. Remember the book? The book of truth? Well, they've already been written in the book, and we saw that all the things that had been written in the days of the Medo-Persian Empire, all those kings, remember, one after the other, all the detail, those things all came to pass just like were written in the book. So what can we have confidence of?
It shall do.
Yeah, this will come to pass just like all the other did as well. And we might not understand every single detail, but it will happen just as God says. He says, of that day, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but the Father alone. Take heed, keep on the alert, for you do not know when the appointed time will come. So is it futile, just 1 second, is it futile to keep on putting a date on all these things?
Yes.
We see it down through the ages, people trying to pin the day down. It's going to happen this day, that day. It says not even the Son of God knows when it's going to happen. So how arrogant of us to think we can know. Yes. I think in this case it's talking about the actual stars. It's talking about the sun and the moon and the events that are going to happen in the heavenly. I think it's talking about the stars. Because some places stars are the angels and the stars some places are the people of Israel. But I think here it's the stars. Yeah.
How can the sun not know the date? Isn't Christ on the
We talked about that last night too. I think that's a mystery to us, but you go back to the old, the marriage, the covenant, yeah, the marriage, how the father would send the pick out the bride, and he'd send the son to propose to the bride, and he would give her, you know, his covenant promise, and then he would go back to home and he would start preparing for the wedding for his wife, and the father would get the banquet ready and he would get all the preparations made, and even the son didn't know when the wedding would be. The bride didn't know. And the father, when he had everything ready, he'd tell the son, even if it was in the middle of the night, he would tell the son, okay, now's the time. Go get her. And so he would go back and he would get his bride and she'd be ready and waiting, and then he'd go back and have the big wedding feast. So I think it's kind of that idea. The son doesn't really know. The father knows. And the father is preparing everything, getting everything ready. And when it's time, he'll send the son.
Voluntarily limited himself. We saw him as a child in the temple, mm-hmm. learning and growing and studying, growing in knowledge and this and that. Mm-hmm. This might not be that he doesn't know now, but that maybe when he was on earth.
So it could be he knows now, but we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know, but
yeah.
That's just another side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's a verse in Revelation 14 that indicates what we're talking about, and it says 14:15. It says, and another angel came out of the temple sanctuary, calling with a mighty voice to him who was sitting upon the throne, put in your sickle and reap, for the hour has arrived. Gather the harvest, for the earth's crop is fully ripened. I mean, if he's going to be told when, that seems to be when it is.
Yeah, we don't really understand total of the relationship between the Father and the Son. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some things we don't really understand, but it says here that he doesn't know, only the Father knows these things. So we don't know. I think that's the point to make, is that he couldn't tell us the day, and so we don't need to be trying to pin it down to a day.
So this verse is always taken to talk about the rapture, and that's not what this verse is talking about. It's not the context mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Revelation 14:15.
No, a lot of these, I think we talked about that, and we did Matthew before, is that the passages that people use about, you know, one will be taken in the field and one will be left, but that's not talking about the rapture. It's talking to Israel here. Okay, then Matthew 23, we get a little bit more of the context, because it's Matthew 23, the end of 23, and then it goes into 24, where we had the same talk we had in Mark, but he says in 37 to 23, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her, often I wanted to gather your children together the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. Behold, your house is being left to you desolate, for I say to you, from now on you will not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So what is the context of that passage there? When does he say these things?
Isn't that right after the triumphal entry?
Okay, it's that triumphal entry when he looks over Jerusalem and he's understanding the fact that they are going to reject their king. And we saw in Daniel, you know, the day of their visitation, that when he was revealed as being the king of Israel, the Messiah, that is when that 69th week ends. And because they did not acknowledge him, he says that because of that, from now on, you will not see me again until you say what? Yeah, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So what do we know? What is the key? Who holds the key to Christ's returning? What?
The people, the Jewish people.
Yeah, it's the repentance of the nation of Israel, isn't it? Because he won't come back until they are ready to say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. You know, we read that, and it's part of our little Palm Sunday thing, but what he's really saying is, I will not return. My second coming will not occur until you, as a nation, acknowledge the fact that I am the one who comes in the name of the Lord. And so they are going to be desolate. And we know that the desolation of Jerusalem, 70 AD, and it from then on. Okay, so Jesus came out from the temple after he said these things, was going away, when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. Because what was Herod's temple like? Yeah, it was one of the wonders of the ancient world. It was big. The stones themselves were like hundreds of tons in size. They were enormous. They're huge. It was so grand. And they were saying, look at this. Surely God is not unhappy with us. Look at our temple. It's so wonderful. And he said to them, do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down. Now, if these were little building blocks or cement blocks, you wouldn't think such a big deal, but this is magnificent, huge, huge, huge stones. So it had to be something very cataclysmic that will come and knock them all down, because when Rome came and destroyed it, how much was left?
Nothing.
Yeah, just the retaining wall that it was built on. I mean, they just knocked those big blocks right down. And the interesting thing was that temple was not even completed until 74 AD. And so when was it destroyed? 70 AD. So how long did they get to enjoy the finished product? What, 6 years? It was just really amazing how little time they had with it. But okay, so there's going to come a time when it's going to be totally destroyed. So that is a big deal. I mean, for him to say that is a really big deal. And so as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came up to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things happen? When is this going to happen? And what will be the sign of your coming, even the end of the age? And Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. Once again, that call to be on your guard, to be discerning, to not be caught away into deception. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. And you will be hearing of what?
Wars.
Yeah, wars and rumors of wars. Remember we saw in the prediction of the prophecy of the 70 weeks that wars were going to characterize that time from then on. So you're going to be hearing of wars and rumors of wars, but they're not to be what? Because those things must take place, but what does it say? It's not the end yet. Just like we saw in Daniel, that there's, you know, all these things are going to happen, but it's not the final time of the end. It's not the complete end yet. And so from verse 4 all the way to verse 14, he's kind of given the general signs. And we talked about this when we studied Matthew. These are just the signs that characterize the age from that time on until the end. And just like with birth pangs, they're going to intensify as the time goes on. And so there have been wars and rumors of war, and there have been nations rising up against nations, and there have been kingdoms fighting against kingdoms and earthquakes and famines. But those things are going to intensify as the time goes on. But the gospel of the kingdom must be preached to the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. And therefore, when you see what? Yes, and he says, which was spoken of through Daniel, our friend, the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. So once again, he's saying this is going to be something. They're asking, when are these things going to happen? And what should be the signs that we are looking for? Well, when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, that's when they should do what? Once again, okay, they should flee. They should flee. So these are things that are specifically going to happen at that period of time. For then there will be a great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will be. So once we get through this one, is there ever going to be another one?
No.
No, and that's really comforting, isn't it? There's never going to be another time like this. Unless those days had been cut short, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect, these days will be cut short. And once again, he says, you know, he's not going to be, it's not going to be for a private person to say, oh, the Messiah has come. Come over here and I'll show him to you. He's over here. He's giving a lecture down the hall over here. It's not going to be like that. When he comes, they're all going to see him, right?
That's another sign that we're not in the millennium, as we've not all seen him.
No. He says, just like the lightning. Lightning flashes from the east to the west. Everybody sees it. So will the coming of the Son of Man be. They're all going to see. We're all going to see him come. Wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heaven will be shaken. And then, here's the sign, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And what is the sign of the Son of Man? He's the sign, right? He is the sign. The sign is not that he has another sign. It is him in the sky. He is the sign. When he appears in the sky, then you'll know it's time. He's here. All the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with great power and glory, and he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds from one end of the sky to the other. And so the point is that when he comes, will they know it?
Yes.
Yes, he will know. So don't be deceived. Don't be following after the false prophets. In the meantime, so the warning, this warning is given to the Jewish community that will be living in those latter days, this from verse 15 on through the end of Matthew 24. This is the warning given to the Jews that will be living at that time. This is not talking about the rapture. This is not talking to the church. It's talking about the nation of Israel, okay? Yes, ma'am. I believe so. Of course, there's many who don't believe so. Okay, any other questions from your lesson or any comments or observations or things that you want to share about this lesson? Yes?
One thing that